Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. We're sitting alongside president and founder of the Hoban Law Group, Bob Hoban. Today we are talking about the status of the global vape industry, and we are joined by CEO and co-founder of the Blink Group, Arnaud Dumas-Deyrolly. Arnaud, thank you for being here with us today.
Hi, guys. Thank you very much for having me. I'm very sorry if you heard that beep. It was actually that amber alert for the curfew that's going on here in Manhattan. It's really weird times at the moment.
It absolutely is. And I know even yourself, you have to get out of the city before that curfew goes into effect. So without further ado, let's jump right into it because there's a lot to talk about with this subject matter. You know, when we connected earlier this week, Arnaud, we talked about that besides COVID, the vape industry, the global vape industry, has already had another crisis just in the last 12 months. That was, of course, the crisis last fall with people getting sick. And yet there's been resilience. So let's just jump right in right there with what you've seen over the past 12 months in the vape industry. What's working? What isn't?
Well, I think it's very important, first of all, to kind of separate the nicotine vaping industry from the cannabis vaping industry. I come from a nicotine vaping industry background. I've been in this industry for 10 years now. So I'm what you call a dinosaur of the industry. And I'm also chairman of the ISO standards on vaping products and the European Commission on vaping products. So really the past 10 years of my life have been around vaping. One of the reasons we created the Blink Group and switched to more of the cannabis side is because 2.5 years ago, a lot of people came to me and were showing me these products that they were using and say, hey, what do you think? I was just looking at them and looking at the viscosity of cannabis oil compared to the porosity of the cotton wicks that I was seeing in these products. And I'm like, guys, this makes no sense. You guys are inhaling dangerous substances and carcinogenic substances because those cotton wicks are producing VOCs and aldehydes and carcinogens. So that's kind of the entire genesis of our journey into cannabis. And I think this industry being so young is kind of caught up in a system where we're trying to figure out how to handle regulation, how to handle the ever-changing regulations without ever being a little bit forward-thinking. Let me explain a little bit, and you're going to see how this is linked to the vaping crisis. Testing emissions, for instance. Why are we testing the oil that's in these products and not testing the aerosol that comes out of them? Because it's that aerosol that goes into people's bodies. It's not the oil itself. And that goes through a state change because you heat it. So in some cases, and we've measured this, there are no pesticides detected in the oil itself, but the VOCs and the chemical the degradation of that oil in the aerosol has cyanide. Has other kind of products that you don't detect in the oil because it's not heated. So I think that's a major paradigm shift that needs to happen in the industry. And thank God, if I could say so, for phase three testing in California. Thank God, and this I hate saying, but I'm sorry, but the vaping crisis was a wake-up call. It was really about letting people know that you can't put anything in your body. You got to be careful about what you do. The U.S., for instance, is one of the only countries where you can launch a product without having done any kind of research on it beforehand. So that is great for business, but this is going to lead to class action lawsuits moving forward. And every company in our industry needs to be prepared and have done their research beforehand.
Well, now you make
this is all.
No, go ahead. Finish your thought. I was going to say, you make a good point. I mean, there is a safe way to do this. I remember when I heard the first notion that this was the vape crisis as it affected the cannabis industry. And, you know, again, not to minimize the effect of it, because as you point out, it was something that is, has been, and will continue to be a serious topic, particularly someone like yourself that comes from the vaping industry outside of cannabis, which was done fast and loose, to put it mildly. And you're right, it was a wake-up call, a necessary one at that. But there is a safe way to do this. What did it turn out was the crux of the issue that led to those, you know, that short compressed time period of illnesses and so forth and so on? The theories had been from contaminants within the product, contaminants amongst the flavorings added to the product, or they were effectively just cheap or very inexpensive Asian-made metal containers and cartridges, which then leached into the product. Or, dare I say, conspiracy theory here, that somehow, some way, it was really just COVID, that people didn't know how to diagnose COVID at that point in time. That actually has floated on the internet from reputable sources, although it seems a little bit far-fetched to me. What are your thoughts on some or any of those topics?
Well, I think, for one, if we had implemented as a country, or even on the state level, emissions testing earlier, there wouldn't have been a vaping crisis. It would have been detected straight away. And second, I think the main culprit in this situation is the additives, either the diluents or the thickeners that were added to these products. It's very basic. These were mostly on black market. So when you look at what does someone who's selling on a black market want to do? Let's say they have 1 liter of pure cannabis oil. They want to sell 2 times more, so they're going to dilute it. Then they get 2 liters. They can sell 2 times more. But after a couple of months, their clients start saying, hey, this is diluted. It's not as thick as the cannabis that I buy on the legal market. So what do? Then they add back thickener in there. So you end up with 4 liters. And you essentially only had 1 liter of THC oil to begin with. Now, the second aspect of this is the use of vitamin E acetate. Vitamin E acetate is cleared for use, for cutaneous use, for use on the skin. It is cleared for ingestion because you have the enzymes inside of your body that will break it down. It has never been cleared for inhalation, or something we call vapology grade. And that was the main problem. It's because those particle sizes, that oil that goes into your lungs are not equipped to handle them. So that was really the main issue here. And again, I'm insisting, if we had set up as a country or as states, emissions testing right from the start, this would have been detected right away. Now, fortunately or unfortunately, depending how you see it, this happens on the black market. A lot of these products on the legal market are tested. There's minimum testing being done. But on the other hand, on the emissions side, we've been doing emissions testing in Europe for vaping products for four to 5 years now. Why isn't anyone doing it here? Because people don't have the foresight to make sure that the people, that their consumers, what they're inhaling is nice. And I can guarantee you, because we've already done some research about this on looking at emissions, that later on we're going to figure out that some of the terpenes that are used should not be used at concentrations of more than 2% in the oil, because they produce volatile organic compounds and they're going to produce carcinogenic substances when turned into aerosol. So, but again, we don't have, this industry has been hindered in terms of research for so many years. We don't have, as a scientific community around cannabis today, enough research to be able to say that. But that is going to happen down the road. And do we want our consumers, after vaping the same brand, the same product for 5 or 6 years, start developing conditions, and then, as I said earlier, end up with a class action lawsuit? Or do we want to tackle that problem right now and put aside some research, put aside some funding to get things done properly? My entire goal is to avoid this happening to the cannabis industry, exactly what happened to the nicotine vaping industry. If you realize, just one really quick last comment on the nicotine vaping front, the U.S. is the only country that is looking at completely banning everything. Everywhere else in the world, you get reimbursed by Social Security for switching from smoking to vaping. Everyone has embraced the harm reduction.
I want to pick up this thread about potential lawsuits that the industry could face or actors in the industry could face. And given your background, Arnaud, chairman of the International ISO Committee on Vaping Standards, what we talked about was that standards already exist. And this is a theme that, Bob, you talk about a lot, no matter what part of the industry it's in, vaping or otherwise. You know, right now we see certain trade associations here in the United States who are trying to be the trailblazers when it comes to creating standards. But I don't know if that's necessarily the right way to go about it. So Arnaud, perhaps you could talk to the importance of ISO certification and standards, and who should be responsible for creating the standards. Where can brands look when it comes to these compliance issues?
Oh, sure. There's a really big misconception around standards. People seem to think standards are about saying you can't use this product here, or here are the limits. No, standards are used to create reproducible results between labs. Exactly what's not happening in the cannabis industry right now. I can tell you, if I send one batch of oil to five different labs, I'm going to get five different results, because they are not using the same protocols and the same methods. That's what standards are for. Now, in terms of having legitimate standards, it's great to get together as an industry and put together standards. Those are best practices, in my sense. They are not standards. The only true way, at least here in the U.S., of getting standards, and standards that would be recognized across the board, is through ANSI. And ANSI is the American member standards body of ISO. And that's the only true way. The problem is, to be able to push that through, we need enough people interested in it and pushing it forward directly with ANSI and saying, guys, we need to create a specific cannabis ISO. Now, there's a couple of other paths that are being used. We're also a member of ASTM D37, which has worked on standards. ASTM is really more focused on North America. But a lot of the times when I see with these standards groups, and even in the different state groups I participate in terms of regulation, is that we tend as an industry to try to reinvent the wheel. All of these standards already exist. Measuring emissions, measuring yeast and mold, measuring pesticides. All of that already exists and has been existing for 20 to 30 years in other industries. We need to be using that as a basis, and as research on cannabis moves forward, then we can always add more information in there. But a GCMS method to understand how much aldehyde you have in a product, or how much heavy metal you have in a product, is the same method no matter what the industry is. And I think that's the main issue that we're seeing right now. We're not getting that sense that everyone is understanding that people have done this before us in other industries. Let's use that as a base and build on it with specifics to cannabinoids.
Those are all excellent points. And I want to hone in on something that you mentioned. The cannabis industry always wants to do something itself. There's this thing out there called the wheel, right? But we're going to reinvent it here and call it the cannabis wheel. It's an unfortunate thing, and it just comes up over and over and over again. When you look at food safety standards for edibles in the marijuana marketplace, or even in the CBD marketplace, when you look at production standards and regulatory standards as it applies to a facility that produces products for human consumption, these standards all exist or not. At the end of the day, for some reason, it's either that the folks within the industry don't care, they think they can do it better, or they think that this is so unique that we have to reinvent the wheel. And yes, so much about this plant and this industry is unique, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't just take those other standards and move them forward. You know, I was thinking about that a lot too when we talk about CBD products. The FDA rules do exist. Has the FDA come out and said these standards apply specifically to industrial hemp derivatives? No, they haven't. Yep. But the DSHEA Act that governs supplements exists. The standards exist. GMP standards exist. Food and nutritional product standards exist. And we've advised our clients from day one to follow those standards. Don't wait for the FDA or a like body to tell you that they exist. Why does that seem more prevalent in this industry than in other industries? What is it?
I think it's really something with nascent industries. I mean, obviously, I love nascent industries because you have a chance to influence the regulation, the compliance, the products themselves, and literally every aspect. I think it's the main aspect of a nascent industry is learning as it goes. But learning doesn't mean shutting your eyes to everything that's already happened in the past. And I'll give you a very clear example. So we make hardware for vaping products. Today, the material that's used is a material called H59 B1 or B2. It's basically copper with two layers of electroplating, so that copper, which contains lead, doesn't leach. The problem is, we're testing these products 24 hours after they're filled. No one has done any stability tests. I can guarantee you that 75% of the products on the market, if you test them 15 days or 30 days after they've been filled, are leaching. Now, why hasn't the industry thought of using, for instance, FDA CFR Title 21 and doing some certifications for that on, for instance, stainless steel? Because stainless steel costs a little bit more, and people are very cost conscious. Another reason why some of these standards are not used is because they require more equipment. They require staff, trained staff. They require much more investment. So the point, there's a fine line between lowering the barriers to entry and putting out a safe product. I'll give you a clear example. As I said earlier, in the U.S., you don't have to do any research on the product. You can literally go buy a cartridge on Alibaba, fill it with your oil, and if your oil passes your state test, you're good to go. In Canada, you have to prove that your battery is UL certified. You have to prove that the material that you're using abides by the CFR Title 21 standard. You have to prove that all of this happens. So a country like Canada, which is literally the market is smaller even than just California, is actually doing things right for the consumer. That is the main thing here is we are selling this. Of course, we're in this because we're a business. We're in this to grow our business. But in the end, if the consumer doesn't like what we do or gets health issues because of what we're doing to save a penny or 10 cents on a piece of hardware, what's the point? You're not building a sustainable industry here. So I think that's really, really important. And that is I have limited experience because this is my second nascent industry, if I can say so. But in both industries, it has always been the same thing. Let's get these things out there. Let's get the product out there. We'll worry about the rest later. And I really don't want us as a cannabis industry to make that mistake and think that we're all in the clear and everything's going to be fine.
Arnaud, your expertise just shines through so bright. We're incredibly grateful to have you on and talk about these issues. When COVID first hit, one of the things we talked about was the supply chain potential impact to the vape hardware supply chain, given that this outbreak of COVID was in China. I remember talking about it with you, Bob. However, I think I remember you saying, Arnaud, that this supply chain has proven to be quite resilient. And I know we got to get you out of Manhattan here in the next few minutes with the impending curfew, but if you could just speak a little bit to the resilience of the vape hardware supply chain and just what you've seen in the last couple of months as it relates to COVID and all of that.
Well, there's actually two subjects, two main directions to answer that question. Number one, of course, is how to have a sustainable supply chain, how to have a redundant supply chain, a resilient supply chain. That is 10 years of work. That is because we're one of the only companies that controls that entire supply chain. We don't just buy from a manufacturer in China and resell. We actually have a team on the ground of 5 people. We just added a 6th person there that is doing all the due diligence with all of our raw material suppliers. We made sure to have 2 major suppliers and 2 minor suppliers for every single raw material. One of the other things that's very important to understand, and I hear a lot of people saying, why don't we make these in the U.S. or in Mexico or anywhere else? The problem is the know-how is in China, has always been in China. This requires a lot of manual work. So to manufacture in the U.S., you'd have to and get close to the price range of products made in China, you would have to manufacture 5 million and sell 5 million pieces a month, which is not even what the entire North American market is consuming. So it's really, really hard. But thanks to the relationships we have made in China, we actually sponsor the Shenzhen City Rugby Club. We were able to dedicate in two of our partner facilities production lines to manufacture masks for the local population, and in turn negotiate that we're going to do that. But as soon as people come back from Chinese New Year, we want our factories open. So we were able to open them, and we were able to produce products right after that. The second aspect to answering that question is really the safety. We're actually doing right now a big campaign on social media explaining all the SOPs that we've required from our assemblers in Shenzhen, wearing safety gloves, having HEPA-filtered wardrobes that run in the evening on all of the PPE equipment, doing ozone decontamination of all the production areas for 2 hours every night after shift. All of that needs to be done. And unfortunately, if we don't go in there and tell the manufacturers, you guys have to set this up, otherwise we're not working with you, it just doesn't happen. So that's why I'm saying it's 2 things. It's really setting up that supply chain and having those relationships with suppliers that we've been working with for 10 years. And also, on the other hand, making sure that all of the safety measures are there to make sure that none of the products come back with germs, with bacteria, with anything. We do UV sanitization on all of the raw material that goes into our workshops. All of our workshops are ISO 8 clean rooms. And all of the material that comes out goes through another level of UV decontamination. So I think that's very, very important. And those are the questions to ask. And I'm not only talking about vaping hardware, I'm talking about any kind of supplier that we have in this industry. Those are the questions to ask all of our suppliers, because COVID is not just about China. COVID is about the entire world, and we're in a good position to know that now.
Well, if it's not incredibly obvious, any of our listeners who touch cannabis vaping hardware, who are involved at all in that sector of the industry, Arnaud Dumas de Raleigh, the Blink Group, you are an absolute expert in this area. We thank you so much for coming on to the Hoban Minute. Let's get you out of Manhattan before that curfew goes into effect, my friend, and we will talk soon.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure. Again, I'm available for anyone. This is, as you can probably tell, I'm very passionate about safety of these products. And I'll do everything I can to make sure that consumers get the safest possible product they get.
Well said. We'll have a good evening. We look forward to talking to you again sometime soon.
Thank you. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hoban Minute. Do you have any ideas for episode topics or guests? We would like to hear from you. Reach out to us at media@hoban.law and stay tuned for more on the Hoban Minute.